Phil. I think we have Otis Richmond. Otis, are you there?
No, I'm not.
Okay. If you could find him and put Otis on the line. Oh, I got it. Call Norman Richmond. He'll fill in. Yeah. How are you doing?
I am, as Sam Cooke would say, wonderful.
Well, we just played Marvin Gaye because you're the one who told me. I checked it out. You've written a great article at Uhuru.com. Today is the birthday of Marvin Gaye. You actually met Marvin Gaye. We always have to say this. You're one of the rare people. You've met practically everybody. And Ray Charles said he's going to come and get you. So you have quite a record.
Ray Charles said he was going to kick my behind, right?
I knew he probably remembered you. Somebody would say, "Rich, you'd be one of the few names that's still in his book." Now, but by the way, they were on opposite. You admired Marvin Gaye, among other reasons, because he was a stand-up guy in the struggle against racism. Talk about that part of him, will you? And also, just how important he is. And I'll remind everybody, you're the bluesologist. Go ahead.
Well, what happened was Marvin Gaye had agreed to do a concert in Cuba.
Well, and, Tom Powers would be glad to hear that.
The only reason he didn't do the concert was because I think whoever was booking the concert was going to have Diana Ross be a part of the concert, which he didn't want any part. He wanted to be the star of this particular show, but, you know...
Oh, my gosh.
He was down with Cuba because Cuba was a progressive state. And I think they put Diana Ross on the bill because it was an opportunity for her to sell more records. That's my understanding. Whereas Marvin was basically trying to show the U.S. that he was his own person, you know.
Yeah.
I saw him, well, he was his own man, his own person, whatever, however you want to characterize it. And he was, I was reading his brother's book. His brother was, his younger brother was a singer too, but his younger brother said that they had a problem with Marvin because when Marvin was going around doing interviews, he would have a copy of Malcolm X Speaks right there in front of him. You know, and everybody, management and everybody was saying, come on, Marvin. It's like... You know, like that's a little bit too much advertisement.
Yeah.
But you know, that was Marvin Gaye. He was a stand up kind of guy. But I remember there was a story that he Barry Gordy called him into the room, and Barry Gordy told him they were arguing about something, and Mr. Gordy says, "Come on, Marvin, be a good boy." And Marvin flipped out and says, come on, you're just like the white man. You're calling me a boy. Blah, 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 blah. And they almost came to blows. Of course, that's like, they were like brother-in-laws. They were like, Marvin had married Barry Gordy's older sister, who was, I guess, 17 years older than him.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time I was in California. There was a record store called Flash Record Store. And this is before I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at a record store, and there were hundreds of women. I may have been one of the few men in there. These women were like eagerly waiting to see Marvin Gaye. And so Marvin walked in with his wife at that particular time. And you know, that was a big letdown.
Yeah.
But so he was, he was a very, very, very stand-up human being.
Yeah. Well, now this great song, Inner City Blues. When did he write that? Why did he write? How much of his writing was him? It's because that's a very that's got a powerful message.
Well, Inner City Blues. I think some of this stuff was inspired by Frankie Gaye, his brother, his younger brother, who joined the Ancestors before he did. But Frankie Gaye went to war,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling Marvin all these stories, and Marvin basically Frankie was the reason he basically wrote those particular songs, mm-hmm. and he had some help on some of the songs, but a lot of the songs he wrote, most of the stuff he wrote himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the songs, I think What's Going On might have been written by one of the guys that was in the Four Tops uh-huh. and someone else and Marvin Gaye.
Uh-huh.
But it was inspired by Frankie Gaye, who I saw. Frankie Gaye came to the either the Le Coq d'Or, which was on Piers Avenue, or the Network. But mm-hmm. he did a concert there, you know, after Marvin passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But Frankie was responsible for that particular thing because he basically was telling Marvin all of the stories of all the things he had to endure, you know, while being in Vietnam and just being in the military, all of the mess he had to take, you know, just being, you know, a colonial subject and fighting for the slave master, the yeah. United States government.
By the way, that's very important, I believe, to underline, is that people don't understand it was that's a period of transition because the military was very segregated at one time. And then when the Vietnam War, they decided, okay, we're going to have black soldiers. They'll be at the front. Wherever the heavy fighting is going to be, that'll be them. And it led to some real volatility, which nobody discusses that much anymore. We're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond.
There was a good friend of mine who passed away by the name of Samori Marksman, who was born in St. Vincent, and he used to be the program director of WBAI before he joined me, before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And he maintains that as bad as the Army was, it was the best, not the best place, but it was less segregated than most of the other places.
Oh, absolutely.
Than a lot of the other places in American society.
Well, actually, that was a paradox. I mean, it's kind of like the post office, where, you know, if you put your application, yes. you might, that you had a legal standing to get that job. Anywhere yes. else, they would say, oh, well, you know, just keep putting it at the bottom. And you're right, of course. Well, by the way, it's a story of poor people. You want to get out of your neighborhood, you go in the military.
I say a friend of mine named Frank Harrison, who just passed away. Mm-hmm. He basically told me that he and his mother, you know, I guess he got 17, 18, they graduated from high school. And his mother basically says, you know, you got to get out of here. And he was basically forced to join the military because, you know, he could, he had to leave home. But at least if he joined, I think he might have joined the Air Force. So he got some education, and he got I guess before he passed away, he was in the hospital a lot, but he got that free health care. Yeah. That's one of the benefits of you know being in the military.
That's right.
And I think Lou Rawls, who was
kind of like a life insurance policy, you take your chances.
Lou Rawls was a great singer, and he was in an automobile accident, and they took him to a. Was in Mississippi. They had a crash, and Sam was in the crash. But Lou Rawls was in a coma, and they took him to a black hospital. And you know, somebody insisted that he was a military man. So they basically took him to the military hospital, and I think he was in a coma for maybe 3 wow. months or something. They say had he not gone to that military hospital, he would have joined the ancestors much earlier than he did. You know.
Yeah. By the way, you touched on so many interesting things here because now you said Lou Rawls. He was in the same church singing group with Sam Cooke.
Yeah, they grew up together.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, all these beautiful voices. And let's take our hat off to the church for training. I want to ask you this. I know you told me, and there's another gentleman we want to talk about. You tell me that there's a very good version of Inner City Blues by Gil Scott-Heron, and it has also been his. Is it his birthday tomorrow? Or is
Gil Scott-Heron's birthday was yesterday. Yes, he was born on April Fool's Day. Born
well,
in,
I'm glad to be reminded of these guys, but particularly Gil Scott-Heron.
Yeah, Gil was born in
the Revolution
in
will not be televised.
He was born in Chicago, a Jamaican father, and a brilliant, well, his father was brilliant, but his mother was, his mother, there should be a book on his mother. His mother was born in Tennessee.
Okay.
And I think they had Alabama.
I didn't get that first name, but Tennessee I got. Yeah.
His mother was born in Tennessee. Uh-huh. And he was raised by his grandmother. I think until he was about 13, then he went to his mother in New York. But all of the Herons, they had college degrees. Mm-hmm. And that was one thing that he was very, very, very proud of, that he came from a very educated family, you know.
Yeah. You made available, I've seen this picture, and thank goodness it was through you I got it. But incidentally, the article by Norman is at uhuru.com. But the photograph I've seen is Gil Scott-Heron, a grown man, kind of wan, a little bit, not in the best of health, I would think, but sitting at his mother's knee. And boy, is that a great picture.
Right. His mother was a genius. And she was a singer as well. And academically, she was, might have been one of the top scholars in the United States of America in terms of, she was a very bright woman.
Well, what was her field? Do you know? I mean, I hate to, this is an unprepared question, so I hope you know. I don't know. Do you know what she was known for, or what her field was?
She was in education, and she was also in music. But she was a great singer, but she was in education.
Mm-hmm. Now. You attended, there's a story you tell, and I think it's in the uhuru.com article, that Marvin Gaye, was it the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, which holds 105,000 people, and there were live performances, but during the break they played Marvin Gaye and they played James Brown, I think it was, you mentioned, but there was a reaction that you said you'd never seen before. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there was. It was in 1978, and it was a thing called the Funk Festival. And at this Funk Festival, you had Brothers Johnson, you had Rufus Shaka Khan and Rufus. You had Bootsy's Rubber Band, and you had Parliament Funkadelic, George Clinton. They were the shows. They were the people. But you know, during the musical breaks, they would play music. So they played James Brown, and you know, James Brown tears up the place all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But when they played the song "Got to Give It Up" by Marvin Gaye, they played the whole song. It was about 11 minutes long. And people stood up and gave the song a standing ovation.
That'd be the kind of moment you'd think that maybe Marvin would call James Brown and say, I don't know if you heard about this, but we had a little contest.
Martin's name is Bobby Scott-Heron, and Gil Scott-Heron's uncle was pitched a no-hitter against Satchel Paige, yeah. You know, Gil was a baseball fanatic and a basketball fanatic. He used to play basketball with Lou Alcindor when he was Lou Alcindor, who became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was the best man at his wedding.
Uh-huh. It's an amazing number of connections. You know, I was so surprised. You telling both, I think you mentioned in both the cases of, certainly of Gaye and of, I forget the other singer, but Rawls. I mean, they had brothers who were in these wars. You know, we live in a celebrity culture now where everybody, once people are celebrities, it's kind of like they all live in Southern California and on Malibu or something. But Each of these individuals is awfully close to rough territory.
Oh, yeah. But it's a comical story because I used to see Gil Scott here, and I used to refer to him as my cousin because his wife, the woman he married, was Brenda Sykes, and my uncle Prentice Gibson married his cousin, Rose Sykes. So me and Gil used to always laugh about that. We are cousins, right? Because they were born in, I guess Brenda might have been born in Shreveport, but you know how we are in America. If she might have been born, maybe she was born in Shreveport, but you know most people pick the biggest city that's near them. If you're born in the country like me, like I'm supposed to either be born in Monroe or at least Gramlin or Shreveport, but not in Arcadia. Nobody's a country bumpkin. Everybody's an urban knight in America. You know? Yeah.
They go by city, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've tried to tell people where I'm from, and I say, I just gave it up. I just say Bakersfield, you know. They know it's dry and hot. That gets it. Let's remember, Norman Otis Richmond was one of the organizers that fought apartheid and went to big you did positive things. You gave awards to people who showed courage and risked their careers a little bit and took a stand with you, and those who were not willing to oppose apartheid, you also picketed. Your thoughts must be a little bit about Winnie Mandela today. You want to tell us a little bit about her before we go? What you thought of her?
Well, I always thought that Winnie got a raw deal because she was in the left wing of the African National Congress. I remember the late General Gordon Baker Jr., who was the first American to refuse to go to Vietnam, and he started the League of Revolution, was one of the founding members of the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. He told me, he says, go pick up the Christian Science Monitor. He was a believer in the Christian Science Monitor. He said the reason that they killed Chris Haney was because there was an alliance between Chris Haney, Winnie Mandela, and I think his name was Gwala. He was an older brother. He was a Zulu brother who despised Gotcha Buthelezi.
Yes, an ally of the apartheid regime from the Zulus.
They had an alliance, and this alliance really made it. You know, everybody agrees that, you know, had Chris Haney lived, South Africa would not be the same, because Chris Haney was a everybody says Chris Haney was a genuine revolutionary.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was good. And you did, I assume, go and pick up the Christian Science Monitor. I can remember that when that was actually a good newspaper.
I would like to go back in. I have so many papers around here. I need to find that article. Maybe find it on the internet and. Mm-hmm. That's put that in circulation.
They call that a keeper, that one. That's a keeper.
So the young folks can see that.
Yeah. Well, Norman Otis Richmond, uhuru.com, Marvin Kaye. That was a great article, Norman. We really appreciate talking to you. We're going to play some Gil Scott Heron, as per your suggestion. And look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much.
Okie doke. Bye-bye. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. FM.